In 2015, the Presbyterian Church of New South Wales voted to opt out of marrying couples under the Marriage Act, assuming the federal government changed the definition of marriage. Good evening, my name is Jim Seymour, I pastor the Tenterfield Presbyterian Church. It's with a heavy heart that I find myself talking to you this evening. I believe this nation stands at the crossroads, and the outcome of this week's federal election could prove to be that crossroad. For you see, lying beneath a lackluster election campaign is an issue that has the potential to tear this nation apart. Sir Henry Parkes delivered his Tenterfield Oration in our town in 1889. It proved to be a speech of such potency that in only 11 years it united the colonies of this land into one indissoluble nation called Australia. Although I don't believe my words will rival the nobility of Sir Henry's speech, my prayer is that somehow my message might arouse similar nationwide awareness and lift a veil of deception from our eyes that Australia might once again start visualising a better future. Friends, you and I both, together with our families, remain the beneficiaries of Sir Henry Parkes' speech. If you've ever travelled overseas as I have, you will know beyond any doubt that this country has become the greatest nation on earth in which to live. Although as a kid I dreamt of becoming Prime Minister one day, but as children, hey, we all have big dreams, I can speak to you tonight knowing that I have no political ambitions, nor do I claim allegiance to any political party or individual standing in this election. The ideals enunciated by Sir Henry Parkes some 126 years ago were far above politics. I too hope my message will be seen to be above politics, for my only motivation is to preserve the good welfare of our nation's families, one people under God, as our Constitution proclaims. Friends, the issue that could tear this nation apart is the demand for marriage equality or same-sex marriage. Former Deputy Prime Minister John Anderson agrees, yet he also points to the Safe Schools program presently proselytising children with gender ideology as a perilous threat as well. Australian feminist Germaine Greer, an unlikely supporter, has also been scathing of the same Safe Schools program. Let me say this right up front. A nation stands or falls on its morality, not economics. Not only will condoning same-sex marriage be a retrograde step, but it will become the first step revealing a huge underbelly of social change designed to destroy families. Now, Christians fully understand, and sadly non-Christians don't, but our fight is never against flesh and blood. It's against principalities, powers, rulers in high places, indeed spiritual forces preying upon otherwise good men and women. I tell you, it's the very heart of evil that's manipulating this sudden demand for same-sex marriage. Faceless powers aren't interested in the welfare of human souls. They only see us as puppets to be used, abused, and discarded as they march relentlessly towards much bigger objectives. With same-sex marriage agreed to in law, these forces will begin to remove our right to exercise conscience, they'll stop free speech, they'll silence in particular the Christian faith, thereby mocking God, remove our property rights and control every aspect of our lives, including how we choose to bring up our children. In short, these forces consider same-sex marriage an important step towards global governance. I myself would prefer to call it global enslavement. Now, I love the people of Australia. If I didn't, I'd have never contemplated stepping into the office of pastor. Consequently, I try very hard to treat all souls equal before our Creator. But that admission doesn't mean I must advocate for those whose ideals differ from my own. Often, when men debate their differences, the outcomes can be better than expected, especially when the interests of the body corporate is the main objective. Sadly, there could be some listening tonight who don't care about the interests of the body corporate, preferring I had no voice at all, especially on matters like same-sex marriage. But as an Australian citizen, I choose to exercise my democratic right. We, as a church family here at Tenterfield Presbyterian, choose to exercise our democratic right to speak our concerns publicly. I pray that by the time I'm finished, common sense will have prevailed, just as it did 100 years ago when initially Parkes faced pockets of opposition in his nationhood proposal. Let me ask the older members of our audience, those who are not homosexual or lesbian themselves, but are same-sex marriage supporters. Were you always a supporter of this ideal? I hear the honest voices saying, no, I wasn't. So what changed your minds? Was it simply mounting public pressure? Were you wrong then, but right now? Or were you right then and wrong now? 4 days before Jesus was crucified, the common folk in Jerusalem hailed Jesus as their Messiah, as he rode a donkey into Jerusalem. Next thing we know, these same people were demanding Jesus be put to death. Why did they change their minds? The religious leaders of the day deceived them into thinking Jesus was a fraud. Initially they were right, but after being manipulated by the powers to be, they became complicit in the greatest misadventure in human history. The Jews are still suffering the consequences of that wrong decision. No wonder Jesus calls us sheep. We're all so easily led astray. Now I remember as a young police officer only 40 years ago that there was an overwhelming expectation of Australian society that demanded people like me arrest men and women who practiced homosexuality. What's happened in 40 years to change our minds? I tell you what's changed our minds. A resolute and decades-long campaign designed to brainwash us into believing the homosexual lifestyle is somehow different to what it was years ago and is now somehow respectable and therefore justifiable. Friends, homosexuality hasn't changed its spots since the days we all vehemently disapproved of it. The only change is it now comes disguised, wrapped in pretty rainbow-coloured paper. So, Pastor, what authority do you have to speak so forcefully against recent changes in social thinking on homosexuality? Well, I'll tell you where I get my authority from. God's calling upon my life. That's where it comes from. And my authority is backed up by the Holy Bible, the highest moral code illuminating true love in this land. Friends, just because 99 people jump off a cliff doesn't mean to say it's right for the 100th to do the same. Now, if you're incensed that I would have the audacity to challenge the Holy Grail, the so-called inevitability of legalising same-sex marriage, and you've already decided that my speech will be a gay hate crime, then please don't switch off. It's very important in a democracy. Everyone hears two sides of a debate before voting to embrace change. And if this federal election is anything, it's certainly a referendum on same-sex marriage and really nothing much else. I thank 10FM for allowing me to broadcast this speech tonight, as it seems most media outlets throughout Australia have decided where they lie regarding same-sex marriage. For recently, I fell victim to restricted free speech by the Fairfax Media Group, owners and publishers of the Tenterfield Star, when they rejected one half of a regular River of Life article I wrote on the transformed life of a North Queensland homosexual man. Fairfax claimed my article was contrary to their policies on social justice and therefore unsuitable for publication. Now that letter can be read in full on our website at tp4c.org.au, and you can make up your own minds. On the 5th of August 2015, Conservative UK MP Mark Spencer advocated anti-terrorism legislation against so-called extremists who refused to surrender their beliefs in traditional marriage, that is, between one man and one woman. Bad news travels fast, it seems, for this heavy-handed approach against advocates of traditional marriage has reached our shores. For freedom to speak against same-sex marriage is being denied everywhere. No wonder more and more of our younger generation are embracing homosexuality as something normal. For they're being desensitized away from 6,000 years of heterosexual normality. My best research has discovered that in all of recorded human history, it was not until the 18th century that for the very first time, a government, indeed the British government, saw fit to pass legislation concerning marriage. Prior to that, common sense prevailed. Men married women, and governments didn't need to interfere in what had been self-regulated since Adam was a boy. Another fascinating discovery was that prior to this present push for marital recognition, homosexuals and lesbians have never, ever demanded their relationships be formalised in any culture, anywhere in the world. It was only after a concerted campaign pressuring the Howard government in 2004 that Mr. Howard was forced to act. And so for the very first time in our nation's history, legislation was passed defining marriage as it always had been, a commitment to holy matrimony between a man and a woman. I remember being told by a Canberra lobbyist friend many years ago, a man who once worked with Labor Minister Lionel Murphy, now deceased, how Murphy wanted to break the monopoly churches had over marriage in Australia. Murphy ordered my friend to go to Sydney, hire a photographer, a good-looking girl, good-looking bloke, pretend that they were being married by what Murphy called a celebrant. The harbourside photos would be used to show how people could marry outside the church. My friend was a Christian. He refused. Murphy sacked him on the spot and got someone else to do his bidding. And so began a departure from being married in the eyes of God. It was all engineered, and the institution of marriage has been under attack ever since. Only this past week, Senator Penny Wong spoke at the 28th Lionel Murphy Memorial Lecture, a forum that apparently still attacks the concept of traditional marriage. She named those who oppose marriage equality as hateful people, all for the sake of justifying her position, I suspect. Back to the events of John Howard and his government's legislation defining marriage between a man and a woman. Listen how former Treasurer of Australia Peter Costello remembers that event. When the Howard government amended the Marriage Act to make it clear marriage was a union between a man and a woman, then Labor Shadow Attorney General Nicola Roxon told the House of Representatives that Labor as a party supported the amendment, declaring the bill is something we do not have an objection to. The bill passed without even a vote being called for. The matter was concluded in 25 minutes, perhaps a record in our parliament. End of quote. What on earth has happened to Australia in 12 short years? If we listen to the media, you'd think there was no issue of greater importance than so-called gay marriage. On the world scene, however, only 19 of 195 member nations of the United Nations have approved same-sex marriage. When this was pointed out to Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull, his response was simply, "Yes, but those closest in culture to ours have done so." My response would be, just because a mate chooses to drive recklessly downtown doesn't mean we have to as well. And just in case you'd forgotten, the Australian Labor Party at their 2015 National Conference adopted a policy that from 2019 onwards, any Labor parliamentarian who votes to support marriage as one man and one woman will be automatically expelled from the party. In other words, in 2019 onwards, Labor MPs must leave their consciences outside the party room. Friends of mine, indeed in this church, feel betrayed by their beloved Labor Party and have handed in their resignations over Labor's insistence to bring on legislation approving same-sex marriage in Australia. Good on them. Removing a person's right to exercise their conscience is a very, very disturbing development. If someone can no longer vote according to their conscience in Parliament, then we as a nation are on a slippery slope to destruction. This is surely a long way from what our founding forefathers envisioned at Federation. For surely they were politicians not afraid to say it like it was. And this is why I believe this nation has never embraced the notion of separation of church and state. Yes, many people speak about it as if it exists here in Australia, but it's never been part of our constitutional structure. And here's why I believe Australians have never fully embraced the notion. We believe in a person's right to exercise one's conscience freely. In the early days of our nation's politics, whether they professed it or not, most politicians had a belief in God and consequently brought a high moral conscience into the parliament. And friends, that legacy has held us in good stead for over 100 years. But to suddenly have our parliament full of yes men, all fearful of exercising their consciences, well, that's just a dreadful state of affairs. There are forces in our midst, hell-bent on deconstructing every freedom we've cherished since Federation. I'm here tonight to reveal the plug that will empty the bathwater of wealth, reservoired for over 100 years, is the issue of same-sex marriage. I would suggest to you that there are question marks hanging over Mr. Turnbull himself, the Labor Party, and the Greens in regard to same-sex marriage. But you're the voters. You have to make up your own mind. Personally, I believe those I've just named already have their fingers on the plug. If they get the chance, they'll pull the plug and this nation will change forever, and I guarantee you won't like it. Before we go further, it's time to send the children to bed so we can talk as adults. Friends, even if we wanted to bestow equality in marriage between two men or two women, it's not physically possible to give them equality with what a man and a woman enjoy in marriage. Firstly, they have no natural ability to reproduce. Next time you see same-sex marriage supporters displaying rainbow-coloured signs claiming love as their justification, remember, their definition of love equals lust. What they're demanding is sexual freedom without boundaries. some leading homosexual and lesbian activists even want extramarital sex normalised, claiming gay marriage could teach heterosexuals of the virtue of such arrangements. And what astounds me is we're allowing these predators to preach their promiscuous balderdash without challenge. Next time you're within earshot of a protester, tell them to get their own symbol as well. For the rainbow is God's covenant sign to all the earth, as detailed in the book of Genesis. Let me ask, is all sexual love acceptable in God's eyes? What about sexual encounters between brothers, between sisters? How about a brother with his sister? What about a mother with her son, or a father with his daughter? What about a grandmother with a grandson? Friends, nowhere does it say the God of love smiles upon all sexual encounters. But it does say God abandons many because of the lust of their hearts. And he allows them to dishonor their bodies among themselves because they've exchanged the truth of God for a lie, choosing to worship creation rather than the Creator. And because they think it's foolish to acknowledge God, God abandons them to vile passions and debased minds. And it's these people who are now grooming our children through programs like Safe Schools. It masquerades as an anti-bullying scheme, and somehow it's wormed its way into our schools. Now, no one's arguing that bullying is wrong, but we've got to toss this sinister program out and start again. Anti-bullying programs don't need to sexualize our children by teaching gender ideology. For girls, for example, who think they're boys to bind to their chests, or for boys who happen to think that they're girls to tuck their genitals. Sadly, these sexualization programs are being rolled out in other parts of the world too. I was horrified when shown a video of how 9 and 10-year-old boys and girls in the same class were being taught how to put condoms on plastic models. I've received reports of junior high school students having to practice lesbian role modelling. I've heard of children being reprimanded for failing to write essays on imagining what they'd do if someone of the same sex approached them sexually. I've read disturbing reports of schools holding rainbow days in support of the homosexual and lesbian lifestyle. Children who refused to participate were ostracised, even bullied. And our federal government has injected $8 million into this Safe Schools program. It's outrageous! I say, let children be children. Teaching sexual ideology to young minds has no place in our schools or our society. It's well known within medical circles that prior to the onset of puberty, young children are often confused about their sexuality. This is why it's so important to teach boys to be boys and girls to be girls. An old Bible proverb says, train up a child in the way that they should go, and when they are older, they won't depart from it. Well, that's good advice. All children need guidance as they grow. They don't need to be told to follow their feelings. At admission myself, I can remember as a 6 and 7 year old being confused about my own sexuality. My dad was away working in Mount Isa, and I was surrounded by many female role models. For a short time, I thought perhaps I should have been born a girl. Thank goodness the Safe Schools program didn't exist back then. Otherwise, there's a real chance I'd have been told to follow my feelings. The Christian Bible warns, we fight spiritual battles daily. Random thoughts pop into our heads. It's just the way it happens. Some are good, some are bad. We're to meditate on the good and cast out all imaginations that exalt themselves above the knowledge of God. Pondering bad thoughts allows bad things to take root in our lives. Just imagine how different this world might have been if a young Adolf Hitler had cast out those initial anti-Semitic thoughts. Abandoning the biblical plumb line as our social standard will see us following after every lie that pops into our heads. God's model for family, dad, mum, and children, is undoubtedly the best model for families. Best model to emulate. I know we're living in a fallen world, and that ideal model is often shattered through death, violence, and abandonment. But no doubt some families with two dads or two mums, they too can provide loving environments. Yet more and more children from these families are growing up and wishing they had a father and a mother so that they might have gained a more balanced upbringing. Consequently, because children have a God-given right to a father and mother, legitimising same-sex marriage is, I'm afraid, a step too far. Does that mean we're to hate these existing quasi-family groups? Absolutely not. Instead, we need to go out of our way to love these people with the love of God. But are we ever going to see an end to these designer families, Pastor? If we continue to allow our universities, our colleges, our high schools, our junior schools, and even some preschools to keep teaching multiple gender ideology, then I suspect the answer is no. I ask you, what have we become? Why are we allowing our children to be exposed to this stuff? Why are we so nonchalant to these accelerating trends? Friends, if we don't stand up soon and shout, enough is enough, then I'm afraid God will allow us to descend very quickly into a time of tribulation Australia has never known before. Lyle Shelton, head of the Australian Christian Lobby, makes a valid point. Humans are made in the image of God and capable of great things. Yet at the same time, we are fundamentally fallen, given to selfishness, excesses, and sin in general. Followers of Christ, however, see in Jesus a model of renewed humanness. And with that newness of life within us, our challenge is to look to the interests of others, not just ourselves. With same-sex marriage, our focus here tonight, it's important to understand God calls Christians to be watchmen. And because we value the sacredness of life and the holiness of marriage above all else, our role is to protect freedom by warning, not judging. And that's what I'm on about tonight. Columnist and atheist Brendan O'Neill writes, "Everywhere gay marriage has been introduced, it has battered freedom, not boosted it." And if Canada is any example to go by, personal freedoms, especially within the sanctity of traditional families, has been greatly impacted since marriage was redefined in 2005. Here in Australia, I'm yet to hear a compassionate voice from the same-sex camp toward those who oppose their demands. All I ever hear are derogatory statements describing us as hateful and intolerant. These accusations are insulting, for nothing could be further from the truth. It's as if their rhetoric is designed to be intimidatory, to close down opposition, as it were. And so, if you think same-sex marriage will have no real negative consequence upon our society as a whole, if approved by law, then think again. If you value your freedom, then vote wisely on the 2nd of July. Now, the great German evangelist Reinhard Bonnke once put on the spot by a journalist concerning same-sex marriage, hoping, of course, to embarrass this great Christian man. A man, by the way, who has been instrumental in leading millions of Africans to a saving grace in Jesus Christ. Reinhardt replied to his question, "When I go to the petrol station, I always put the fuel nozzle into the opening for the fuel tank. I never put it up the exhaust." The interview ceased immediately. I mean to say, where else do you go with that? But it just makes sense though, doesn't it? Males are not being designed to put the seed-bearing instrument into the sewer pipe. God's program is for men and women to marry, then to multiply. And it appears this God-ordained model has served the world well, for it's been practiced throughout generations, across religious lines, and within cultures for 6,000 years now. God designed marriage to exist between a man and a woman that he might demonstrate his love for humanity. It pictures God loving his bride, that's the church, and how he wants to redeem her by cleansing her so she can be reconciled into his presence forever with great joy and fanfare. But since the days Adam and Eve rebelled against God, that union could only take place through the cutting of a covenant. In other words, the shedding of innocent blood to wash away the sins of the guilty. Jesus Christ became our husbandman by shedding his innocent blood for the sake of humanity. We appropriate that life-saving benefit into our lives by faith. God says, "Whosoever believes in Jesus and remains faithful to him will not perish, but have everlasting life." Marriage, therefore, is God's institution, and governments have no right to hijack or redefine it. If they do, they're acting like God. And woe betide any government who claims to be the ultimate authority and not God. When a man and a woman come together in holy matrimony, they consummate the marriage through intercourse. The entrance to every virgin woman's womb is sealed by a membrane called the hymen. When the hymen is penetrated for the very first time, blood is shed. This cutting of the covenant between a man and a woman signifies to God that they are now officially married. How then can a homosexual or lesbian couple consummate a marriage? It's not physically possible. Consequently, even if society agreed to same-sex marriage, it can never be equal to heterosexual marriage. Demanding marriage equality is simply a farce. Now, from a health perspective, anal sex is considered high risk because the anal and rectal tissues are delicate and don't naturally lubricate. They tear easily and permit disease transmission. Common sense dictates no civilized society ought ever sanction same-sex marriage, for that would legitimize a sexual act potentially harmful, for it's against the course of nature. If you're not a practicing homosexual or lesbian, but you now support the concept of same-sex marriage, then please listen carefully. You may have homosexual and lesbian friends. If so, be there for them. Care for them. Be kind and generous towards them. Your friends may be victims of grooming or sexual reorientation at a time when they were vulnerable in pre-puberty days. Maybe they had a poor relationship with parents, particularly the father, and this has had a devastating effect on their lives. Can you blame them for seeking love in all the wrong places? They may also be the victim of spiritual attack. You need to be there for them, to show them love, in a non-sexual way, of course. For you see, they may be searching for a way to escape. Escape the lifestyle they've found themselves in. And perhaps they're looking for someone like you to confide in. How can they confide in someone who's always telling them they're wrong? Whatever you do, though, do not condone their sexual behaviour. I emphasise that again. Do not condone their sexual behaviour. Now, I'm not for one moment suggesting that your homosexual and lesbian friends are not decent law-abiding citizens, but whenever homosexual and lesbian lifestyles have been condoned by the wider community in days past, pedophilia has also become fashionable. In both the ancient Greek and Roman empires, it was the social norm for high-ranking male politicians to parade their young boys publicly. Don't think it'll happen here? Think again. The only thing we learn from history is that we learn nothing from history. Policing pedophilia today is almost a lost battle. Granting marriage licenses to same-sex couples will be the straw that breaks the back of law enforcement agencies battling pedophilia. If you want to protect the lives of your children and grandchildren from sexual predators, then it's time to stand up and say enough is enough to this rampant sexualization of our nation's children. Saying no to same-sex marriage will fire an arrow into the heart of this unholy movement. As I near the end of my message, let me make it very clear. Homosexuals and lesbians are welcome in our church anytime. We'll gladly extend the hand of friendship to share how the love of Jesus has set us all free from the penalty of sin. No one has a right to hate or show violence toward anyone in this country, irrespective of their sexual preference. Surely the recent slaughter of innocent men and women in Orlando, Florida, USA, drove this point home to us. 49 lives snuffed out by homosexual Muslim, no less. Confused? So am I. But let me say this. If we continue to pander to both the homosexual and Islamic lobbies in this country and give them everything they want, don't be surprised when we hear of another powder keg exploding, but this time in a neighbourhood closer to home. Do you think my warning is a bit too raw? Then before you take the high moral ground, answer me this question. According to the Sun Herald newspaper, why didn't social media outrage to the killings in Orlando, Florida, ever reach the height of social comment being posted at the same time, mind you, about actress Meg Ryan's new facelift? Friends, it appears all our hearts are hardening and our minds are dulling. 600 years before Christ was born, the prophet Isaiah wrote, "Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil." Then, in the New Testament, the apostle Paul spoke of our days when he wrote, "Perilous times shall come, for people will love only themselves and their money. They will be boastful and proud, scoffing at God, disobedient to their parents, and ungrateful. They will consider nothing sacred. They will be unloving and unforgiving, and they will slander others and have no self-control. They will be cruel and hate what is good. They will betray their friends, be reckless, puffed up with pride, and love pleasure rather than God. They will have a form of godliness, but deny the power thereof." If that's not describing the heartless world in which we all live today, then I'll eat my hat. When God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, it appears it wasn't because homosexuals were terrorizing the inhabitants of the city. God destroyed them all because the majority of residents condoned the practice of homosexuality. Did you hear what I just said? In other words, they turned a blind eye to what was happening and became complicit in what God called an abomination. Abraham's nephew, a man called Lot, had only recently moved to Sodom. When he was visited by two male angels, the men of the city wanted to rape them. Lot told those guys, "Hey, that would be evil." The men replied by saying, "Who made you judge over us?" Isn't that the same accusation made by advocates of the same-sex marriage group towards anyone daring to speak out against them? History is simply repeating itself. Let's not be like Sodom. Let's not capitulate to a decades-long campaign grooming us into justifying their behaviour, with their finish line tantalisingly close. Let's just all wake up and refuse to condone same-sex marriage in Australia. Oh, the lies that have convinced us of God's reluctance to come and transform our world. I tell you, friends, it has nothing to do with his reluctance, but everything to do with our resistance. God has never changed his mind. A nation will stand or fall on the level of morality we so choose. Let's be determined to make the future prosperous for our children. Bless us, Lord, and advance Australia Fair. Vote wisely on the 2nd of July 2016. Written and spoken by Jim Seymour, 117 Logan Street, Tenterfield, authorised Jamie Gibbons, Jeff Hovey.